You're listening to the Limitless Mind, Limitless Body podcast. This is the Understanding You series, episode 4, with John Swanepoel and Paula Ralph. Today, Paula and I are going to discuss depression and give some tips on how to take yourself out of that, especially if you've served in the military.
How are you, John?
Oh, good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah. I'm great.
Another crazy week.
Yes.
In paradise, as they say.
Yes, wasn't very paradisical yesterday with that rain. I was walking around the mountain, got
Did you?
Caught. So it turned into a bit of a run. Yeah.
It came down hard, eh?
It was pouring.
Right. In the last week, I got pinged, as we used to say, by my sensei. In the UK to do 25-25, which is going around on Facebook. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yes.
The British Forces guys and women are, some of them are struggling after serving and the experiences they had, and so they're taking their lives. Or they really struggling with post-traumatic stress and depression.
Yeah.
And so what, you know, it's been going around for a while. I remember I did it with Chloe joined in when she was little. Last time we did 21, because there were 21 people dying a day.
21.
That was back in, I think, 2016, suicide, you know, killing themselves because they just couldn't cope. Mm. And so it's, I guess it's gone up. Either there's more people doing it or they're just making us do more press-ups. I don't know. But we're doing 25 press-ups for 25 days to raise awareness to try and get more support out there for people that are struggling with depression, struggling with post-traumatic stress.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe it would be a good time, seeing I'm doing the press-ups, to just talk about depression.
Absolutely.
And as a ex-pharmacist,
yeah,
you would have had huge amount of dealings with that. So I thought that,
yeah.
Tell me a bit about the pharmacist approach, because we all know, you go to the doctor, you know, they diagnose you with depression and they give you some meds, yeah? As a practitioner, my point of view now, whether it's a accurate scientific interpretation or what, I mean, I have to change a lot of what comes up in sessions into layman's terms, right? So I like to describe it as, when you take an antidepressant, it creates a state of indifference. That's like you don't care. You're no longer necessarily in a depressive state, but you're not happy either.
For some. So antidepressants are one of the most commonly dispensed drugs in pharmacy. I don't know the statistics anymore, but it was huge numbers, citalopram, fluoxetine, and all the others. Yeah. Huge numbers every day. Like we were unpacking outers every day from the warehouse to refill the shelves. I think Losec for the gut was the other thing, which is really interesting, and we should talk about that later.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yes,
Zantac and Losec.
Absolutely.
So antidepressants. So a lot of people were on antidepressants. They came in and they'd start them and they'd be on them for a long, long time. And the advice is generally don't stop, because they're working for you. So there are, my observations were like, geez, these don't seem to be working. If you can't stop, why are you saying that they're working? You know, if you don't feel great,
yeah,
is that what we call working? Hmm. I had one lady who, after 3 weeks of taking them, they seemed to kick in. Life was amazing, and she was off them 3 weeks later.
Cool.
So, and never had the rebound. She was just great, but there were a whole lot of lifestyle interventions that she made at the same time.
The key. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was always, I was reading the reports and the science, trying to understand how they work. The serotonin reuptake mechanism was blocked, and which meant we had more circulating serotonin in our brain. Problem is, they were being prescribed for anxiety as well. And it never made sense to me that one drug could be used for depression and one drug could be used for anxiety, which seemed to me to be different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Whereas depression is like really down and really down in the dumps, and anxiety is you're a bit uptight, strung out. So how could the same drug help two completely different presentations of problems? And I was scratching my head with that, and it's not very cool to speak up and go, I don't get it. Yeah. So I didn't.
Yeah.
So the what happened then? I started doing mind-body neurolinguistic study, a few bits and pieces, and one lady came in to me in particular one evening, and she was crying. She said, look, I'm on antidepressants. I don't know. They're not working. What else can I do? And she was, you know, really frantic. She was looking along the shelves for anything that would work. And I said, how about you try a gratitude diary? Because I'd just read about one. And I didn't even know what they were really. But I just said, try a gratitude diary. Keep taking your meds, but try a gratitude diary. So for people who don't know what that is something that you find at the end of the day. You sit there in your bed or in a chair or something.
Yep.
And you think of something that went really well for you that day. And you find five things. So for the first probably week or 10 days, you're sitting there going, oh, what am I really grateful for today? Gee, there's probably not much actually. Bloody stupid day I had. Oh, well, you make something up. I'm glad I have eyes to see through. I'm glad my car started this morning. I'm really glad someone fixed the pothole in the road that I had to drive around. And you fake it. And then one day it actually kicks in. And this woman, she did a gratitude diary every night. She came back 2 weeks later and she said, it's changed my life.
Yeah.
Absolutely changed my life.
That little increment of focus every day.
Yes.
And that is coming for the guys and the forces, we'll come on to that in a sec, is so important to help them get out of where they're at.
Yeah.
Just a case I had years ago, he was referred by a good friend of mine, and this guy had been on antidepressants for ages too. And he came in, and you know, I've mentioned in previous sessions, previous podcasts, you know, we used biofeedback or muscle testing to go where the subconscious mind wants to go and what the subconscious mind wants to do as an interpretation. Anyway, we also test at the end of a session, muscle test, to see whether the person wants to come back or not.
Yeah.
And if so, if there's a specific day they want to come back, you know, because if you're muscle testing all the way through a session, you know, I don't have the right to say you've got to come back next week because I might not get permission when you come back next week. If your body says, no, I don't want a session, then I don't do a session.
Right? Not much can be achieved. Yeah.
So anyway, so we count out the days. He came back, I think it was about 12 days later, he came back in and he said, you know, I'm only here because I just want to come and tell you, I don't feel I need any more sessions. And he said, and the next day when I woke up, I felt so good. I actually stopped taking my meds. And I was like, mate, you can't just go and do that. You've got to go and get, you know, I never said that. You've got to go and speak to your doctor about that. You know, just, and he said, no. He said it was really clear. It was like, and I realized, when I walked out the house, because he walked his dog every day on the beach, and he used to go on the beach, turn right, and walk a sort of a K up the beach. He would bump into one of his mates that'd sit on the bench, have a chat, and then he'd walk the dog back again and go home. And he said, something had clicked, something had changed, and it completely shifted him. So when he got to the beach, he was like, I really like my mate. You know, we're always going to be mates. But I'm going to turn left today.
Mm-hmm.
because I don't actually want to have those conversations anymore.
Yeah.
And so he went and he did that. And he said there was this sort of smog that had lifted, and he genuinely didn't feel like he needed to take meds anymore. So that's a description of an extreme case where he didn't really need to go through a process for himself to pull himself out.
Mm.
Yeah. But most people, including myself, have had to go through a process or need to go through a process of dragging themselves out of the depths.
Yeah.
And so finding that that process that works for you is the key. And there's lots of different things, but the gratitude diary is an awesome example.
It's really easy.
Yeah.
I've had times where I've been a bit down in the dumps too, and it's like, okay, you know, to do the gratitude diary. It's just one thing you can do.
Yeah.
And you really feel like you're faking it.
Yeah.
But when things actually hit the heart, when the heart starts opening up and going, yeah, actually, I was really grateful that I saw those amazing agapanthus on the hillside. That was one that got me. That's when things started to change. But it's about looking at the bright side of life rather than going to bed and going, oh, what a horrible day. What a shitty thing happened to me. And I wish they hadn't looked at me like that. Or, you know, I didn't get that special at the supermarket that I was looking for. I missed or lost the voucher. Or, you know, you look at what is good and it really puts a different spin on things. And it's incredibly powerful.
Yeah. So if there's any guys that served in the forces that are listening, or women, I served in the Royal Marines from 1984 to 1996, and I ended up being a drill instructor, so I was instilling the commander ethos that was in place, that was expected. And basically, it's a collection of things. As an individual, they want to look at, they need to have courage, determination, unselfishness, cheerfulness, and adversity. That's the key.
Cheerfulness
and adversity. As a collective, they're looking for excellence, looking for integrity, which, you know, a lot of corporate organizations look for excellence and integrity.
Yeah.
You know, self-discipline, they look for that as well.
Yeah.
Humility, courage, as an organization, determination, which is a no-brainer, because what these guys go through, if you don't have determination, you ain't getting
there. You got to know the goal.
Unselfishness and cheerfulness as an ethos. The closest, and the thing that made me smile when I was thinking back yesterday and just reviewing the conditioning side of things, because that's, for me, was... For me, I truly believe it was the conditioning that I had around this ethos, and the time I was in serving, that was the foundation for me going into depression. And I didn't go into depression straight away when I left.
Mm.
It took me a couple of years, and then it hit me like a freight train.
Mm.
And I think it's because with this ethos, you're in an elite organization.
Mm.
And the thing I noticed here was there's no kindness.
No kindness.
No kindness in the ethos. You know, the closest you'll get to kindness is unselfishness.
Mm. Be nice to change that word to kindness, wouldn't it?
Well, it's not going to work. You can't, because of the job they do.
Okay.
So these guys are elite individuals that are trained for one thing, to kill people. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, or are used as a an extreme police organization in a really high risk zone, you know, so they'll go out and patrol the streets and be active in maintaining an area, keeping danger out of the area, you know, keeping the civilians safe. But you know, and they're taught to interact with civilians and to build rapport and support for a civilian population.
Mm-hmm.
But kindness isn't in the heading.
The way you're talking about it sounds very harsh. The civilian population.
That's how they talk.
It's, takes away kindness is a softer feeling.
And you see, so if you're stepping out of an organization like that where you've been conditioned to a very, in a very specific way, and you're moving into Civvy Street, this is where, yes, there are plenty of civilians with courage and determination. There's a lot of civvies that are unselfish. There's a huge amount of them that were kind. And I think that that's what hit me the most, because I went from the Royal Marines to be a physio. So I went to physio school. And there's a huge amount of kindness there, because you're learning how to help people and take them out of pain, and very supportive group of people. Very caring, a very caring profession, you know. So there's a huge amount of kindness. And that was very refreshing for me, even though... I mean, it made me feel really good, but I didn't know what it was at the time. If I'm looking back, in retrospect here, and trying to put bring some consciousness into the experience that I had, and so instilling all of this, at the same time, when you will find courage and integrity and, you know, good bearing in individuals in Civvy Street, you know, unselfishness, and a lot of them are cheerful, you know, some of them have got amazing sense
great
of humor.
Which is, I
miss, you know, sometimes I miss the military sense of humor. It's so funny, especially this cheerfulness in adversity. Some of the funniest memories I have are in some of the most outrageous situations where guys just start cracking up to say something, and you just can't stop laughing because it's just so absurd, you know. A really important way of being. With an elite attitude going to Civvy Street, there's not the same expectation, because it's so much more diverse.
Okay, so in
an organization like this, it's very elite, and there's a very set expectation of how you're supposed to present yourself, you know.
It's an institution.
Absolutely, And so I find it, you know, from an interpretation perspective, expectations of projections are some of the biggest limitations that we impose on ourselves, and that's what we
that applies to relationships a lot.
Absolutely, yeah. And so when you come out of an elite organization and you go into Civvy Street, the expectations and projections that you've been used to. So, a projection is it could be, I'm in the core. This is a great organization. Expectation is that everyone else around you thinks the same thing. And so when you go out into Civvy Street, this is where I've come from, this is who I am, and this is how I present myself to the world. I will always do my very best. I will be as perfect as I possibly can. I will always deliver 100% all the time. Expectation is that you're going to get the same back. And it doesn't always happen, and it doesn't need to. You know, this is and any force, it's there for a specific reason. You have to do training to a specific level because people's lives depend on it.
When
you come to Civvy Street, they don't have that. So coming out, it's also not just the conditioning on yourself and the belief systems and experiences that you've had. We've got to let that go. We're never going to be untrained, but we have to
soften that a little bit.
You have to soften it a lot. That's basically the foundation. For me, it was the foundation, I think, looking back in retrospect, of what started the spiral down, because of the expectations weren't there. I'd come from an organization where I knew that guy were going to deliver 100%. And I go
and
into,
you came into the real world where some people might and some people might not.
And then there's a disillusionment or a difficulty in adjusting into that. That's when I started to spiral down and so I distracted myself. So while I was studying, I then went and started doing night shifts, 12-hour night shifts. So I ended up doing 48 hours a week in night shifts.
Yeah.
and working as a physio as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was like, oh, it was almost like one of my colleagues that we were doing some work together said, it was kind of like, it wasn't hard enough for you, so you had to make it even harder.
Mm.
Because you're just an elite organization, so that's where you've come from. So, you know, that kind of thing. Mm. And so pulling myself out of that, it was incremental. Like you say, I had to break things down into 10-minute increments.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't come across the gratitude thing. I was just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you don't want to socialize with anyone.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk to anyone. You don't want to make friends. You want to be on your own. Yeah. And you don't want to talk about where you've come from. Mm. And okay, it was okay because I had something to focus on, like physiotherapy, studying that. Had patients to treat when I was in hospitals and things.
Yeah.
Had assignments to do. I had a job to go to.
Yeah.
You know. So I just go home. And you just went, it spiraled down and spiraled down. And stop moving your body. You don't want to move your body. You don't want to do anything.
So you go into a freeze mode.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Sounded like you went into, you were quite used to living in the fight flight mode, sympathetic level. Yeah, yeah. And yes, when you went into that depression, you went into the crash, the freeze.
Yeah. So, but because the training that I'd had, it sort of came in waves. So, you know, you'd be down for a while and then you'd go, come on, pick yourself up, determination, get up there, you know, and you take yourself out and you go and do something and that's the natural trait. So if the guy's struggling with this, break everything down into 10-minute increments. So what can I do in the next 10 minutes? Even though you don't feel like moving your body, you don't feel like interacting with anyone else, you don't want to talk to anyone else, you know, you may not even want to hang out with other people, move your body.
Absolutely. Physiology's got a huge part to do with how our emotions and our thinking is affected by changing physiology. Simply lifting your chin is a massive, massive difference.
And if you can't smile, put a pencil in your mouth.
And don't let your lips touch it. Yeah. Exactly. Yes, you fake it until you become it.
Yeah. But, and I must say to these guys, if there's anyone listening, move your body in a kind way.
Yep. Yoga, walking.
What works for you. You know, in the forces, especially in the Marines, you thrash it. So you thrash yourself. You are paid to keep fit to a very high level, and so they're constantly go. Sometimes it's better on your body physiologically to be kind to yourself.
Do it with kindness.
The kindness, but that's not in the ethos.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's something new. What does that mean to me? If I'm going to be kind to my body, what does that actually mean? Do I want to go and thrash myself for a 10-mile run, or a 10K run, or whatever, wherever you are?
Mm.
Or do I want to maybe do some yin yoga?
Yeah, or go for a bike ride. Or
swim. Yeah. You know, especially those guys that have been seriously injured. You can be limited in the amount of activities you can do. If you have a lot of scarring and you have a lot of serious injury, that you're still recovering from, or have a long-term recovery program in place, you know, obviously you're going to be really well taken care of, especially in the UK with the NHS and the physio departments and everything. But, you know, if you've gone through that process and you're finding yourself dipping, swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, do plenty of that.
Just carrying on with that physiological impact on our mood, I was going through a tough time. Now, I haven't had a PTSD, so I haven't experienced it. I was going through a tough time, and every time I really enjoyed doing Sudoku. So I'd stick my head down and I started crying every time I put my head down to do this flipping Sudoku. And I was crying, and I put my head up to look out the window, and the crying went away. And I thought, well, that's weird. So I put my head down again to carry on with the Sudoku, and the tears were just flooding through, and they kept dropping on the paper, and I was making holes in the paper with them. And I put my head up and they abated, and I felt the sadness float down to my feet almost.
Wow.
So I can highly recommend, if you are feeling depressed or down in the dumps or just having a really shitty day, raise your chin and then raise your eyes up to the sky even. And you will notice that the your inner voice that you talk to yourself with lightens up. It gets more curious and interested in the world. You'll see more. Play cloud pictures. Make notes of what's going on in the clouds, because the mood lift is enormous by raising your eyes and your chin.
Yeah,
it's huge.
Simple things, eh?
It's simple.
Really simple.
And you walk. You notice people in malls walking around, and they are looking at the ground.
Shuffling.
Yeah.
If you look at it from an emotional release perspective as well. The lungs, large intestine are your acute and subacute emotional release system. Lungs, large intestine create and dissipate grief, yeah. but also all the other emotions too. So if you know you laugh, cry, sigh, shout, scream, yawn, sneeze, any exhalation, can have an emotional charge release within it. So that's the acute emotional release. Subacute goes down through the large intestine. So, you know, and once you're aware of that, you suddenly do realize when you've had an emotional shift, because you can get diarrhea for no reason.
Yeah, it's great, hey? Better out than in.
Yeah, absolutely no reason. And you go, where did that come from? Well, the reason is you actually had a subacute emotional release. And you didn't want to talk about it or cry about it or you know, anything like that. So it went out the other end.
Yeah. Our bodies tell us so much. And when we were talking to Tessa a couple of weeks ago, 80% of the information whizzing around comes from our body.
Yeah.
Interpreted by the head. Sometimes it doesn't even get it.
Yeah.
Consciously.
Yeah. Well, you say,
but that message is in the body.
Well, like you say, you know, you felt the energy go down through to your feet.
Yeah.
I'm just not that sensitive. I just don't feel. I've never felt energy like that. I'll tell a lie. I've had a couple of experiences where I've felt that. I just know that something's changed.
Something's changed. Yeah, for me it was like feeling there was a sludgy pool of muck down by my feet that I could access any time I wanted to look at it.
You jump back in the quagmire.
I want to have a bad day. I'm going to go and jump in my mucky, sludgy pool.
And another thing that in retrospect I look back at was my nutrition wasn't very good as a student.
Huge.
Yeah, there was no excuse. Yeah. I mean, I could have, I was just being. No. But when you're in a depressive state, you know, you can't be asked. You don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a whole different podcast.
Yeah.
We do the small intestine and the anxiety. We'll talk about low sick there. Absolutely. Yeah. but it's so important. The microbiome is so important for ultimate health
and
anxiety is, if you want to look at a TCM interpretation, you know, heart, small intestine are a pair, the fire element, and they govern harmony, joy, sadness, anxiety. Anxiety is worrying about the future.
Yeah.
And also the pancreas as well. So it's all digestive orientated stuff. The pancreas also helps to process anxiety or create anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But that's more about anxiety around adaptation. So worrying about the future and how you're going to adapt into the future.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the majority of guys coming out from the forces have lost the framework, have lost the institutional framework that they've had, the guidelines that they live by, the excellence elitism that they live by, and they're coming into actually any, you know, the world's their oyster. They can choose and be whoever they want to be.
Yeah.
But it can be overwhelming. So
when you've come from a world where perfection is the requirement to a world where done is better than perfect, that's quite a step down, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite a realization.
Yeah. So I was thinking, how would I, you know, I got through not just by, breaking into 10-minute increments, and asking questions without trying to find the right answer. That came much later. For me, it was I actually had three sessions of body talk with a colleague. We did three swap mm-hmm. sessions. And by the end of the third session, I'd come out and it'd been sorted, so I could look back in retrospect and see how insane I was. You know, I'm not calling guys that have depression now. I'm just talking about me.
You were insane.
Yeah, I was. You know, I was like, Jarvis. You know, because when I say that, it was like my thought processes, how I saw the world, and that's nothing to do with the forces. That's how I was brought up as a kid in Africa.
That all plays into
absolutely.
It. And our thoughts
absolutely.
We think are real.
The foundation. No, yeah. Forces is forces. You know, when you come out, yeah. You know, everyone adapts differently. Some guys thrive and some guys struggle, you know. But it's finding the tools to get us through the struggle, if that's what you're finding. Asking questions without trying to find the right answer, that comes back to the first couple of podcasts that we did looking at the infinite being. You know, if we always follow that, we are spiritual beings. We're infinite beings having a human experience, and the human experience is the game console, you know. And the game console has a finite memory, you know, a finite capacity, if you like. And so we can fill our game console with a whole lot of information and knowledge and things. But you know, all you got to do is ask questions to get more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we haven't been conditioned to do that. We've been conditioned that we already spoke about. We've been conditioned to do as you're told and give the right answer, especially in the forces. Do as you're told, give the right answer, be there on time, wear this, carry that.
And you have achieved perfection.
Yes, and eat this. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you can run for as long as you like, as hard as you like, and fight at the end of it. Right. So it's asking questions without trying to find the right answer is really expansive. So what do I need to perceive, know, be, and receive today with ease to lift my mood? To move forward in life with ease, to connect with the right people that are going to bring me joy. You know, that we haven't been taught how to ask questions in that way. We've been taught to do as we're told, so we're waiting for something to happen.
I kind of say I can't wait to see what I'm going to find out today.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's nothing, and sometimes it's heaps that goes on.
It's
a curiosity.
Yeah.
It's that curiosity. It's such a great.
But also staying open to the potential of an answer, because we don't know how the answer is going to show up.
Yeah.
It might be in a conversation between a little toddler and her mum, or you know, something you read in the paper, something you
catches your eye or your ear, or
you're driving past a billboard, or you know, it's random, or just someone, you have a conversation with someone, or they, you know, they demonstrate kindness to you, and there's no agenda, they're just kind.
Yeah.
They don't want anything from you. They just at random act of kindness.
So that all sounds very a real spiritual thing, and that's part of it. But they have gone into the brain and the reticular activating system, the brain.
Yeah.
If it knows you want to find something, it will unconsciously look around and find you something to find.
Yeah, which is why asking that question.
So it's got to be a value to the heart.
Yeah.
It's got to be important to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And making statements as well. So today I'm choosing to feel good about myself. Today I'm choosing to be happy. Then it's a choice. Then the reticulated system.
Yeah, and that's where those mantras, you sort of think, I'm worth it, I'm worth it, I'm worth it. And you sort of think, actually this is a load of shit.
Yeah.
Keep on, because you are feeding your RAS.
Yeah.
With things that it needs encouragement to find you things to,
but also,
show that back.
What are you actually choosing? And that makes you sort of sit
more
back
discerning.
And think, what am I going to choose? Am I choosing today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you're verbalizing it, then that'll start to show up. People will start to come in your life that actually make you smile. Someone will tell you a joke. You'll see something funny because you're choosing to be happy.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing.
So, takes a lot of reminding, though. You have to remind yourself a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a new way of thinking.
Yes.
You've got to change the way of thinking. And maybe even get into a routine where, you know, I don't know, when you get up in the morning, whatever time that is, you go, okay, for the first 15 minutes, or break it into 10-minute increments, the first 10 minutes after I wake up, I'm going to focus on what questions do I need to ask today, and what statements am I going to make.
You could do that. And then once you do that, if you practice it, during the day you remind yourself. So every time you come to a traffic light, you say it again. Every time you touch a door handle, I'm going to say it again. And those are little tricks that help you.
It does help. It does, it does. It helps you change your routine, which is basically what we need to do when you're in a state of depression.
Yeah.
You need to get out of that the routine, whatever habits and whatever thought processes you've been living by that's got you there in the first place.
Mm.
You've got to create new
structures. Something's
got to
change.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is where I think when we go on to antidepressants, we're taking a tablet to, but we're not making those changes in ourselves. So we're expecting a poor little tablet to try and do something for us when we're not actually changing how we're thinking and what we're doing. I've actually been on antidepressants and they didn't do a bloody thing, but I actually wasn't that depressed. So I kind of thought I'd be slightly more elated. No.
I think that takes me back to the ethos again, you know, the self-discipline, you know, and the fact that you're in an elite organization, actually there's nothing wrong with me. Harden up.
Yeah, you're perfect as you are. Yeah, you are in an experience that requires an adjustment.
Oh, that's consciousness. From the depressive state, the condition that you have is that actually get on with it, shut up, get on with it, harden up.
Yeah.
Now they're not. I mean, I spoke to when they first went into, I think it was in the mid-2000s, when they went into Iraq, just after being in there. I phoned up the Commando Training Center and spoke to one of the officers there, just letting them know that, you know, there are practitioners. And if anyone needs this information, please message me either on Facebook or here. I can put you in touch with the Body Talk System practitioners in the UK if you want to go and see someone in person, or you can speak to me. In New Zealand, that's fine. But I'm just letting him know that there were modalities out there that can disconnect active memory really quickly and help people survive.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
Trauma processes.
But the thing he said was that the problem was that these guys that were serving shut up and put up with.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to jeopardize their job. They didn't want to go and say, look, I'm having problems here.
Mm.
And then they get put in the crazy basket, and they get their services no longer required, you know. So they wanted to keep their job and keep doing what they were doing.
Mm.
And so you said that was the problem they were up against.
Yeah.
Was guys who were actually
do it privately
serving.
Then?
Well, yeah, absolutely. yeah. I mean,
do something.
Absolutely. And much easier when you leave, because there's no expectations. But it's that conditioning, that elitist conditioning, which was denial for me. So I never went on any meds. You know, there was nothing wrong with me. I didn't need medication.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm totally okay.
I'm all good.
I can deal with it. Yeah. Okay. So I'm down every now and again, but that's fine. But when I came out of it and I look back, as I wasn't just down, I'd been run over by a freight train for a week or two.
And kindness to yourself wasn't something you knew how to do.
It's not a priority.
Yeah. I can say that I work with women who've had trauma giving birth.
Wow.
And a lot of women don't actually think that they should feel traumatized from giving birth, because we've all given birth. You know, lots of women have given birth. So why should they feel like a princess and like, oh, it didn't go as well as I hoped? It's absolutely fair enough.
Yeah.
Look, if you feel traumatized, well, then you are.
Yes.
And it's not up to anyone to say, no, you're wrong for thinking that.
Exactly right.
If you didn't like the way someone spoke to you and it has left you as a little piece of jelly, well, then it's okay. You're allowed to own that.
Yeah.
And you can do something about it.
And that's being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cut some slack for yourself.
It's like, it's just, they do such a great job. These guys, just an awesome, awesome bunch of men.
Yeah, fabulous.
Such a privilege to have worked alongside them and with them and that, you know.
Yeah.
If you're struggling at all, just contact, you know, especially on this 25-25, I've named guys that I served with and I will continue to do that all the way through. I know that every man I name would be more than happy to speak to someone. Lend an ear if that's what you need to do. And if any of the guys I've named are struggling, you know, get in touch with me or any other guys that you've worked with. The last thing, just to recap what we said before in the earlier things, you know, coming out, another aspect of it was not being understood in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Because of where you've come from. Mm-hmm. There's lots of assumptions, projections and expectations on you. And even more so, I think, now I've not been in the UK since, I left in 2001, 2002. So missed the whole of this, the conflict that they've just been through firsthand. Guys coming back and readjusting from Afghanistan and readjusting from Iraq and places like that, because there was so much going on in the news and everyone knows what's going on. They see, how many people were being killed over there and things. There's also a huge amount of projections and expectations towards the individual coming out of the forces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to hear your story. A lot of people be making you wrong for what you've done. A lot of people be making you right for what you've done. Mm-hmm. Everything else, and that's going back to those three points. The first one is, you know, what someone says to you and how they behave towards you is their stuff. That's their story.
Mm.
Okay, we got to stand in our truth and who we are, and not let, you know, just allow them to have their story. It's okay.
Stings though, doesn't it? When their story gets slumped on you and it stings.
Yeah. Well, it stings if you go to the third part, which is don't make yourself wrong.
Yeah.
So someone else's interesting point of view will sting to the level that you make yourself wrong. I know that's hard to get your head around.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think anyway, you know. If you're not making yourself wrong, you're standing in your truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stand in your truth.
Yeah. And you're creating space between you and what the story. And the more space you have between you and the story, the easier it is to see as a story and the less reaction you go into.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it's their story. It's okay that they have that story.
Yeah.
If their story is really supportive, kind and nurturing to you, then you keep them in your life and you keep them around you. Mm. They're going to lift you.
Mm.
If their story is a negative disruption to your life, then you don't need to have that.
Wish them well and
move on. See you later, mate.
Yeah.
See you later in kindness, because at the end of the day, we've done the training, we've gone through that job to protect them.
Yeah.
Not that they were in any danger from, you know, the whole of Afghanistan coming over and invading the UK. It's not that. Yeah. It's not. that wasn't the case. Mm. Terrorism. Yes. So, but you know, it's not going in. That's a whole different thing anyway. But I mean, you know, so this being an allowance of other people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tolerance of other people.
God, that's everyday life as well. But I imagine when you have come from the forces, and if you have experienced a trauma, and it may be just a, that's the definition of trauma though. What is trauma? Is it an event? Was it a bomb going off? Was it a car accident or something? Mm. Or was it a whole 6 years that you were in the forces?
That's conditioning.
That's a whole conditioned trauma.
Yeah. So there's two types. This is what I say anyway. There's post-conditioning stress disorder, which is what I've been talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a post-conditioning coming out of an organization. We've been very specifically conditioned into Sibi Street, where it's very different.
Yeah.
And then it's trying to adjust into that. Yeah. Post-traumatic stress. So conditioning. So the conditioning is how you've been create what you created to behave and act.
Mm-hmm.
Post-traumatic stress is the trauma that you've experienced. So the conditioning can compound the trauma.
Yeah.
The trauma is the trauma, and it is really extreme for some individuals.
Yeah.
But the fact that, you know, you've got to have determination, you know, you've got to have bearing, you've got to have integrity, you've got to have willpower, you've got to have grit. You know, you've got to keep yourself going, pick yourself up, harden up, keep going.
It's all very gutsy stuff.
Yeah.
Not much heart in there.
Some people, you know, it can stop people from speaking out, you know, when they really need to.
Yeah.
So don't let the conditioning stop you from getting help if you've had a traumatic experience.
Mm.
Speak to someone. And even if you need to do it in confidence, if you need to speak to someone in confidence, contact myself, even Paula, you know.
I mean, even Paula.
Well, I mean, from a
absolutely
ex-military perspective, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, I get it.
I'm just saying. Paula would be awesome to chat to, mate. Just get rid of it. Yeah. So there's that, and the 3 points, what someone else thinks about you is none of your business.
Yeah.
We just don't even go there. We don't need to.
Yeah.
It's okay. Focus on what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve in life? And if you're really struggling with that, what are you going to do in the next 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm. And what are you grateful for at the end of the day?
Yeah. You can do that every 10 minutes. What am I going to do in the next 10 minutes?
It's quite good to do at lunchtime and then again at bedtime.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Get a nice piece of paper and write down.
Yeah. So antidepressants work?
Some people, they work very, very well.
Yep.
And some people, they don't make an iota of difference.
Yeah. And so acknowledging that, if you found that the antidepressants work really well for you, then that's great. Say it. Keep on with them. Mm. But also do the exercises. Look at your nutrition, which we'll come on to in a different podcast.
Yes.
Look at who you're hanging around with. Look at how people are treating you. Get away from the people that are treating you in a destructive or,
Well, you become an average of the five people you hang around with the most.
Yeah.
So if you sort of look at those five people and go, actually, I don't quite like what you're doing, but you're a good mate.
Yeah.
You don't quite like, there's something about them, it's time to maybe change your five.
Well, it's like that guy going on the beach,
Yeah.
Turn left instead of right.
Yeah, spot on.
Turn left instead of right and go and do that.
And get a dog.
Get a dog.
Dogs are good.
Yeah, dogs are good. Yeah, they love you no matter what you do.
That's unconditional love, isn't
totally,
it, a dog?
Mate. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. There you go.
Yeah, thank you. Trauma is so individual to everybody.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine conditioned into that sort of thing as well. It's just another little layer over top, but you know what, the human spirit will shine through, I think, and you can get through it, but sometimes you just need to reach out. You can't do everything by yourself.
No, you can't.
Yeah, sometimes you need to reach out, and
it's okay to reach out.
Oh my god, that's why people like you and I are here.
The vulnerability creates a stronger connection, I think, with people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If people can see that there's an element of vulnerability, that was another thing. Staunch, not vulnerable.
Have a little wall around that heart and protect it and not allowed to feel into the heart. And vulnerability is perhaps letting a little chink through that wall and it's actually quite nice on the other side.
Mm. Yeah. Human nature.
Yeah.
Because humans, the nature of humans isn't to kill one another. You have to be trained to do that. It's not a natural thing for the 99% of humans.
But it's natural to protect each other.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And to do that to whatever level you need to.
Yeah.
That's the difference between peaceful and harmless, right?
Yeah.
Peaceful people will fight, defend, and harmless people are just harmless. They need protecting. So you do it that way.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John.
Oh, thanks.
So you're going to do your 25 today?
I will be doing my 25 today.
You do it right here.
I could do it right here, but I need to video it as evidence. So I'll do it and I'll post
You are getting
this.
Faster. It's impressive.
Well, it's only been a week. I have to get the press-up bars out later. Got to demonstrate, some progress.
Yeah.
Do you want to start?
No. I'll finish my walk around the mountain.
Oh, mate.
Thanks, John.
That's no worries. Thanks, Paula. So much.
You've been listening to Limitless Mind, Limitless Body podcast. The Understanding You series, episode 4 on depression with John Swanepoel and Paula Ralph. If you would like to find out any more information about the Body Talk system, which has been mentioned during this podcast, go to www.bodytalksystem.com and look up a practitioner near you in your country. If you have any other questions or would like to speak to either Paula or myself in person, contact us via the information below. Thanks for joining us.